Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Well, folks, it is now or never. I can't emphasize that enough. And as a matter of fact, I'm hoping people are starting to recognize that the exigencies, you know, it's not going, the problem we're going to be facing will not be a single-pronged attack. They have been working and have surrounded us in so many facets of our life, from our monetary system, from our physical control and physical security, from our health care, from our education. I could go on and on and on. Almost every aspect of your life has been seized by the tentacles of government. Now, where? Please show me where in the Constitution either the state government has the power to do these things, or where in the U.S. Constitution for the United States, where in that Constitution does the general government have the power to mandate these things for the states to do as well as for themselves to do? It's about time to wake up. It is beyond time to wake up. I'm almost at a point where I'm going, you know, what is the point other than we're just going to move forward in getting the Reclaiming the Republic network started? Because it's not like I'm not trying to create an organization. I am trying to supplement the existing organizations out there. And if you're a part of these organizations that are not affiliated, believe me, it's not that we haven't reached out. And if we haven't reached out, it's just that there's thousands of organizations. I'm serious. There's tens of thousands of organizations. As a matter of fact, just in churches alone, I was looking at the statistics. Just in Christian churches in America today, there are over 500,000 American churches, or I should say Christian-based churches, or what they refer to themselves as Christian. Out of that, there are only less than 20,000. I think it's closer to 10,000 churches in America. And that may be just individual churches or individual churches and sects or, you know, denominations, because a lot of independent churches are their own denomination. But the fact is, it's less than 20,000 are based on Scripture and, you know, in understanding and based on and accepting the Bible as the Word of God. In other words, they talk about, oh, well, the Bible provides really good allegories, but it is not the Word of God. It's not definitive. How can these churches be Christian? Now, I just want to give you this picture regarding Christianity, and now just quickly turn right back to our head and look at conservative organizations. I actually dropped the bomb on some people in Idaho because they were just absolutely flabbergasted on some of the information I was giving them in a direct dialogue. And they were going, are you kidding me? Our state legislators know that there's this lawsuit. There are people in this state that understand this. And I've told them, yes, and there's a reason why. There's a reason why nobody's talking about it. There's a reason why they will not listen to me. And they're going, are you kidding? And I go, no. And I've given them all the, so since then, I've given them all this stuff, and they're just absolutely flabbergasted. And they're actually going out this week to actually test the waters and prove GR to be correct. Because what they're going to do is they're going to go to the number one conservative organization in Idaho. A few of you know what that is. And if you don't, it's the John Birch Society. And they're going to go out and they're going to test the waters. And say, they're going to just ask some members, hey, what do you know about, you know, this Reclaiming the Republic? What do you know about this lawsuit? What do you know about G.R. Mobley? And they're all, anything that's pointing towards Reclaiming the Republic or Republic Review, G.R. Mobley, they'll know nothing about the lawsuit. And that's just because They've isolated themselves. They don't want to unite. They don't want to work with others. They want to have a complete control over who is at their altar. In other words, they're all about, what do we call that, self-interest. They're, you know, what is maintaining their relevance. There are way too many of these organizations that exist, friends, and there are way too many people that are part of it. I think that the best way, the only way, I don't care how good you think a group is. I don't care how good you think a person is. When they put their self-interest above everything else, then you have to walk away. You absolutely, it's just like the prodigal child. The prodigal child, when they put their self-interest over everything else, did the father go chase the child? Did the father demand the child? Did the father exercise compulsion? No. As a matter of fact, he understood the importance of making the choices for oneself. And as a matter of fact, out of this group, and as a matter of fact, I've gotten a couple of people that have come back and said, wow, I've never looked at the Constitution the way you've described it regarding allowing states to become states in the Union. And they act, so there's a lot of people kind of complain, and there's one gentleman actually says, I'll die fighting this concept of globalism. No, globalism is good. And I go, do you mean to tell me that the U.S. Constitution and what the Lord inspired is not good? And he goes, I don't care how you want to spin it, GR. You know, you may be a word bender or a soothsayer, or, you know, you may be really good with words and you might be able to win the argument, but I still will not buy into globalism under the U.S. Constitution. And I'm going, wow. However, there has been some clarity over the weekend because this is not Feedback Friday. Because there's so many things that are happening. There are so many things that are happening. That's why I kind of started off. It is not a single-pronged attack that we are facing. But the beautiful thing is some of the clarity that's coming out, because there's still so much muddy water. There are still a lot of people that are in the conservative ranks that are outright fighting. They're doing everything they can to keep you on the divisive track, because that is how we all lose. As long as we're divided, we cannot unite. So anyway, and I'll maybe this later on this week, I'll talk more, or if not this week, maybe next week. And I'll talk to the group and the organization about making public the conversation that we've had regarding the research and everything else that in organizing Reclaiming the Republic to start airing in a particular state and so forth. But I don't want to get into those details at this point. But what I do want to get into is the clarity, because there have been a couple of light bulbs that have gone on over people's heads when they realize that what I'm talking about, allowing Crimea, or at least offering and letting them choose for themselves, as Ukraine, as Crimea, Hong Kong, Taiwan, nations, that giving them the liberty, the agency to choose for themselves the direction that they want to go. How Christ-like is that? At a state level, to be able to have the people of a state be able to openly and honestly and democratically choose for themselves which way they want to go. Do they want to continue to be sucked into this compulsion and this state of tyranny? Or do they want to actually see? And to be honest with you, the way things are looking, you know, as America, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, can't see beyond. They see the federal government, they see the tyranny in America, and they go, how is that any better? But there are those that actually understand and see the Constitution. They go, we are far better off there than we are here, because there's still hope for America. There is still hope. And as we look and we start recognizing that all we're doing is we're giving them the liberty to change themselves. You know, when a person, you know, finally finds Christ, when the person finally admits that, you know, he is their Savior and they go down this path, there's a lot of things that change in that person's life. It's just not, you know, it's not like you flip a switch and then that person's perfect for the rest of their lives. And as a matter of fact, there's a lot of work and due diligence that has to be maintained for every single one of us. These countries are the same thing. These countries will have to struggle as they become a territory. They could easily drop out of territorial status as they choose not to start integrating, because bottom line, and see, this is how the wool's been pulled over our eyes and how we've handled all of these other territories. There should have been a schedule for Puerto Rico to say, you know, here are your milestones. If you really want to become a state, then you'll have these things adopted by this point, these things adopted by this point, so forth and so on and so on and so on. And it'll be a resource loaded schedule. So many people will have to pass the test of speaking English, the legal system and the change and the monetary, all these different systems will have to be integrated or at least converted into integrating with the United States. And we've been duped, and the federal government has basically been, you know, unconstitutionally draining our resources in supporting all of these things, from welfare at home, from abortions, as well as these territories. Just because they get this label, now the federal government can spend more money and put us deeper in debt faster. Why have they been spending money at breakneck speeds since Wilson was president? They've been trying to bankrupt this country for such a long time, and look, they still haven't been able to do it. We've been that resilient economically. Anyway, we got two promos. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
You know, they say knowledge is profound. I mean, when you start realizing and understanding the application, and especially when you actually apply fundamental principles, I mean, why is it that Puerto Rico has been able to just linger out there all of this time as a territory? Man, we've been played. And the people that have been benefiting have been actually cartels and cabals, not the people of Puerto Rico. But they get the stipend, and they get to play. They're part of the game, but they're the slaves, just like all the people that get onto the entitlement train. I don't know if you've ever read Ward Connerly's book, My Fight Against Equal, something like that. His lifelong fight against equal. It's an awesome book. Go get it and listen to it. Because he talks about how the black community realized the dangers of the welfare state. And his mother, when he was a very young child, I believe it was his mother or his grandma. I think it was his grandmother. I think he was raised by his grandmother. His grandmother spoke out about how the evils of welfare and so forth. And it wasn't until after they finally moved to California where social workers and I think the ministry, the cloth, the local minister came in with social workers to help these families get onto the entitlement state. Now, why do you think these ministers wanted these people to be able to start receiving government welfare? Well, because that would be more money in their pocket, and as they felt like, wow, we're blessed, now we have some money, some of that money would fall into that plate on Sunday, don't you think? If you didn't see the racket, if you didn't see the kickbacks and the involvement in how the black community had been played by their own supposedly men of God, and it's not just the black community, it's every community. As the day, and I've talked about this, and I've said this, the day America went down the evangelical path where people made a living out of being a, you know, a minister or clergy. In other words, that's what you paid them by your donations. Over that went into their pocket. That didn't go to God's work. That went into their labors. In other words, they actually became the professional preachers. In the 1820s, at about that time, in the Second Awakening, that was when man, or at least the United States, started turning its back towards God and those principles that we all belong and we all have to contribute the labors and so forth. Anyway, the point is that I love it when I see people start getting the reality. They get that light bulb go off, that epiphany occurs. They go, oh my gosh. You know, this would be awesome because as people start going down this path, you know, there's people that fall. There's people that, you know, start to say, I want to improve my life. I want to quit smoking. I want to stop doing this. I want to do the right thing. And they get on the path of doing the right thing. A lot of times people fall. They fail. And so there's a good chance that some of these states will actually fail. And they may have to, you know, go away and come back and petition again. And the conditions may be, the bar may be just a little bit higher, but it's still an available bar for every country in the world to actually embrace liberty and embrace the system that we were blessed with. This is why on Friday I started going down this historical path and I started helping people understand, or actually last week, I started helping people understand that, you know, as you start looking at, you know, entanglements and all of these things historically, America had to mature. America actually had to be able to start protecting itself abroad. It was not able to protect its commerce and its interests abroad. And so before we could even start taking on, you know, new states coming into the Union or anything like that to grow beyond our territorial, you know, North American contiguous United States and then Alaska and Hawaii, that happened much later. By the time we took on Alaska and Hawaii, we had the ability of projecting force and protecting our commerce. We actually became, as everybody calls it, the policemen of the world. But it was in our interest to do so. However, we were being nice, and it's noble that we're out there actually, you know, protecting all the commerce. Everybody benefited from that, and we got the rap. We got the dirty name for that. As a matter of fact, a lot of people poke, but you know, oh, America, you're getting yourself involved in things that aren't, you know, aren't for you to get involved in. Who anointed you to be the police of the world? You know, we have a right to protect our promise, our property. We have a right to protect our commerce as well as our interests. And we have a right to actually if any nation wants, they have a right to petition, because it's right there in our Constitution. They have a right to petition to say, we want to partake in that. And if they're serious, they vote, and they, you know, we get involved, and we kind of hold their hand. They can start coming. I mean, if they're really serious, they'll get on that path, and they will do what is necessary to make all the changes. And who knows? They could be the stellar. I mean, when you look at immigrants in America today, they're far more patriotic than most Americans that are born here five, six generations. Why is that? Because they understand. And these new nations would probably understand what they've had to go through and what they've done to be able to shake off corruption, shake off all of these problems, to be able to enjoy liberty. You can't tell me, if you've ever gone to church and you see somebody come in that's kind of new, that just joined, and they're discovering the gospel or they're discovering the word for the first time, and they're reading these things, and they come up to you and go, do you realize what, you know, what this says and what this means? You know, referring to some scripture or something, and you go, absolutely, I do. It's so refreshing. Why is it that we don't want that to be applied to political liberty in the world, where every person alive in the world can enjoy the free agencies of, and like I say, that symbiotic relationship between the principles of liberty, from freedom or free agency, as well as responsibility and accountability. Friends, I love it when you start connecting these dots. And I understand that there are some points in time when I talk about these things, and depending on how I say it, and sometimes people don't get it. Why do you think I go through the same material every year? And I don't say, and I don't read, and I don't use the same language or vernacular or the way about telling you. I try to come up with different ways to help you see it so that you go, aha, yes, I've got this. Back off. I've got it now. I can take this from here. Because that's what we need. We need every one of you to get involved. We need every one of you to say, I've got it from here. And with that, you know that this show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you are listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. Bob's seminar is coming up. I actually talked to Bob this past weekend. He's sorry. You know, things are sliding, but he is working on this seminar. Now, we didn't get into the details of what the seminar is going to include. And I think, I'm hoping that there's not a, you know, some reason why. But as far as I'm concerned, based on our last conversation, this should all be addressing and helping people understand what the heck he has in this lawsuit and how Congress can act. We could actually make this a ballot issue this year. That we could actually force Congress, or actually we could get the candidates challenging Congress and get Congress, those who are running, to actually commit to saying, we will make this right, America. Just think about this. As we're heading into war and we're looking at people getting, children getting killed from vaccines, all sorts of things that the federal government has no business doing. And you should read my constitutional minutes as I poke the state legislatures in the eye again, as I point out that there is still not one state legislature out there that is even considering or talking about doing an emergency session, going into full-time mode legislation and doing full-time discovery as to what the heck the federal government is doing. If there has ever been a time that has required such an act and such emergency and the exigencies of what we're facing, friends, now is the time. There has never been a better time than now to take a stand, and it is now or never. So, Gary Smith, Fortitude Financial Coaching, give him a reach out, a hello, an email, contact him. I was going to say give him a contact. Yeah, anyway, you can tell I'm kind of in a hurry. Give him an email, reach out to him, talk to him, let him know that you are looking to, you know, get your life in order and you want to do these good things, right? Also, we've got Constitution Education by Keith Broders. out in Florida. Check out some of the material that he's done. There's, as a matter of fact, I'll even plug Doug Gibbs. Doug Gibbs out of Southern California actually has constitutional classes, and he actually has a book and so forth. If you want to actually buy his class, his book, and then maybe start offering that and reading that, I don't know about copyrights and all that other stuff, but you know, there are lots of good sources out there. And I'll plug Doug Gibbs because of this. Because Doug Gibbs recognizes Republic Review, and he actually teaches that and has integrated that into his new courses as an actual option, a legitimate option, instead of an Article 5 convention or instead of doing nothing. Anyway, we've got TimberNation.com. We've also got Stan out at RadioDustCovers.com. And, oh, by the way, he is now doing ammo reloading covers if you've got an ammo reloader that, you know, you'd like to have protected and covered, and adlocal.com. When we come back, we're going to get back into the constitutional jurisdictional limitations of the general government. That's a mouthful. We'll be right back after this.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so just as we were kind of terminating on Thursday this constitutional legal jurisdiction limitation on the general government, we kind of had gone over some things. Now, one of the things we really covered up front is this tie, this inseparable bond between the equal footing doctrine. In other words, all states are to be equal with the uniformity clause, which is a part of the preamble in Article 1, Section 8. Because it clearly states that the United States, all duties, impost, excise, any type of burden that the federal government can place upon a state has to be done equally across the states. And then, as new states started coming in, they all had to be equal sovereigns so that they had access to all of their resources. The federal government, there's nowhere in the Constitution that allows them to take any resource away from them. And yet, as Missouri was enabled, and as they started standing up and establishing more states after Missouri, and it started even before Missouri, the federal government started dabbling. They crossed the line by saying, oh, states, there's these natural resources like these salt mines and these salt springs that you can't sell those, and you can't, you're going to have to maintain those as a national interest. The federal government had no power to do that. They had no power to do that. Now, it's one thing if all of a sudden those became uranium mines because, one, they're really dangerous, and, two, they become a part of a strategic interest for national defense, then the federal government would be obligated to come in and not necessarily own those, but just claim those, you know, the actual uranium that's in that mine, but not all minerals. They now own the mineral rights unconstitutionally under everybody's feet in the United States. They basically grandfathered that to everybody. When the original 13 states, if you bought property, you found gold on your property, that was yours. Not anymore. Mineral rights have been stolen from you, and so forth and so on. And so as we start looking at the Western states, we can actually see how they actually started robbing and creating extra burdens because Western states can't control their own forests. No, that's federal land now. Where in the Constitution do they have the power to even control a forest? Oh, no, it's a territory. No, it is a resource of a sovereign state. And where in the Constitution are they allowed to control anything within a sovereign state? A territory cannot be a state. You cannot create a territory within a sovereign state, or you've basically said you're not sovereign anymore, states. And they don't have that authority to do that. I can't say this any more simpler. But next time I say it next year or in 6 months or so, hopefully it may make sense if it doesn't make sense now. Maybe that might be one of my problems. I'm not just the best communicator. I think I'm speaking plain English. I was in a situation where I was wearing a mask. And I wear a mask, folks, not because, you know, I'm compliant. Because I have a lung disease, I really want to protect myself. I really don't want to be exposed to a cold or anything like that. And I appreciate anybody that sees that, that would respect that and say, wow, you know, the last thing I'd want to do is infect you. And as a matter of fact, my wife has marching orders. That if somebody who knows that I have a lung disease, that I am susceptible, and they have a virus, I told my wife, you know, if they kill me because they've given me the flu or what have you, sue them. Take everything from them, because that is a wrongful death lawsuit waiting to happen right there. And it's never happened. People need to start taking, you know, we're not cavemen anymore. I understand this herd mentality and everything else, but there is a legal liability when you cause harm. And we have to get to a point where we mature to realize that, why, you know, okay, do you want to get immune? I mean, when I was a child, my mother exposed us to the measles and to the mumps, and we all had this, you know, sleepover over at somebody's house who had whatever the dreaded disease was, or I should say, you know, this virus or whatever, and we all got it, and you know, they just kind of did it in a lump thing, and then we were done. Get it over with, instead of, you know, having it rip through your family, you know, 1, 2, 3 at a time. Everybody get it. There you go. You're done. Okay, that makes sense, but that's the choice of the parents. Let's say you don't want that to happen. Let's say you want it to naturally happen. If it never happens, well, you know, your child, as they become an adult and they get mumps or they get measles or what have you, and it really knocks them out or really causes a problem, you know, you could say, oh, well, I guess I should have done it as a child. It probably would have been safer, maybe better, or what have you. But these are choices we all have to make. And when we make choices, there are consequences. And if death arises, okay, anyway, I've gone down this tangent. Back to this jurisdictional limitation. We have identified and tied these two inseparable doctrines of equal footing doctrine as well as the uniformity doctrine, the uniformity clause within the Constitution. Now we start going through the actual enumerated Constitution and state rights and fundamental contract law. And so as we covered through the citations of the ratification debates, which we just kind of covered, we started getting into the Virginia and the Kentucky resolutions, and especially we were covering the resolutions that Madison had, or the clarifications on the Virginia resolutions that Madison had put into his report of 1800. Now, we covered these separately, But I want to tie this all together because now you have a comprehensive document that ties together the limitations, the jurisdictional limitations of the general government. If it is not an enumerated power, if it is not within the Constitution, they can't even have it in their courtroom. What they should be doing is they should be shooing out all of these issues regarding, oh, well, they've bent over backwards to try to figure out how they can link something that actually creates this jurisdiction. And when you look at the three presidential vetoes of the Department of Transportation, we had three presidents that said, you can't start creating implications because this, this, and this. He says, it has to be an enumerated thing within the Constitution, period. And if it's not, you can't meddle with it. And Monroe was probably the best in his veto statement. Now, moving on. So this is where we kind of covered that the states had to be the tribunal. That's what we last covered. And we just started getting into the point of fact where Madison starts going into and covering this thing called why the federal government cannot be, why the Supreme Court cannot be the final judge. And so this is what he says. In this same report, Madison even pointed out to the fact that the judiciary could not be the final arbiters regarding violations committed by the general government in state. You know, by the way, just had this conversation yesterday with a guy on Facebook. I gave him some of these citations and so forth. I think it's important that people start actually reading these documents so that they can actually see it for themselves and go, wow, I mean, GR really makes these bold assertions. You know, that's nothing compared to what Madison is saying here. And this is what he says. But it is objected that the judicial authority is to be regarded as the sole expositor of the Constitution in this last resort. And it may be asked for what reason the declaration by the General Assembly, supposing it to be theoretically true, could be required at the present day and in so solemn a manner. On this objection, it might be observed. Now, he's giving you these suppositions. It might be observed first that there may be instances of usurped power, which the forms of the Constitution would never draw within the use of the judicial department. Secondly, that if the decision of the judiciary to be raised above the authority of the sovereign parties of the Constitution, the decisions of the other departments not carried by the forms of the Constitution before the judiciary must be equally authoritative and final with the decisions of that department. So in other words, he says, you know, even if they just applied this to this, to the judiciary, shoot, it also opens the door that the other departments would equally be able to have that equal application. But the proper answer to the objection is that the resolution of the General Assembly relates to those great and extraordinary cases in which all the forms of the part or the Constitution may prove ineffectual against infractions dangerous to the essential rights of the parties to it. The resolution supposes that dangerous powers not delegated may not only be usurped and executed by the other departments, but the judicial department also may exercise or sanction dangerous powers beyond the grant of the Constitution. And consequently, the ultimate right of the parties to the Constitution to judge whether the compact has been dangerously violated must extend to violations by one delegated authority as well as by another, by the judiciary as well as by the executive or the legislature. However true, therefore, it may be that the judicial department is in all questions submitted to it by the forms of the Constitution to decide in the last resort. This resort must necessarily be deemed the last in relation to the authorities of the departments of the government, not in relation to the rights of the parties to the constitutional compact, from which the judicial as well as the other departments hold their delegated trusts. On any other hypothesis, the delegation of judicial power would annul the authority, deleting it. And the concurrence of this department with the others is usurped might I'm going to come back to this because I won't be able to finish it. This is really important. This is really powerful. You're going to love this when we come back.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let's get back to what Madison was just saying, because this is so powerful, because he not only points out that they could usurp these powers, but in so doing, they could actually annul the state powers. And over time, with enough of the slapdowns, America could actually be beaten into, these states, these sovereign states, could be beaten into submission. And this is exactly what we're facing. This is exactly what I am seeing in these state legislators. As I started talking and ranting at the very beginning of this episode, how we have yet to see any state recognize this constitutional crisis, the magnitude of this constitutional crisis, and the fact that they are literally twiddling their thumbs and not doing the one thing that they have to do. And that one thing that they have to do is to call for an emergency session. And you know what, folks? I'll even throw this out there. Go look at what just happened. We have CPAC. Go read. Go look. And you find any reference to the fact that we're in a constitutional crisis and state legislators need to step up and step into this. They need to step into this buzzsaw with full force and stop this federal government from killing and attacking your state sovereignty, your individual rights, your liberty. Everything that they're doing is attacking us and destroying our constitutional republic. The evidence is overwhelming. How could you say otherwise? How could these people just actually allow these things? How can these state legislators allow these things to be going on? As a matter of fact, some of these people that I've reached out to, they're more interested in that little shiny light of having an opportunity to make more or to become, you know, a little more popular with the populace instead of doing what is right. Folks, you need to start challenging these folks. You need to step in and do what must be done. And as a matter of fact, I hate to say this, folks, but when you look at the age groups, we really need to start questioning these, what is it, the gender X, we need to look at the millennials, we need to look at all of these different age groups and say, you know what, I'm sorry, you don't understand. you can't understand because of your education. We need to, if they really deserve to become a candidate, or I should say become an elected official in the state legislature or at your county commissioners, at your county level, state level, they need to articulate. They need to actually get out there and talk about how the Constitution's enumerated, not only in powers, but in roles and responsibilities. And these are the only things and the only way the federal government can act. They do not have the ability to make it up as they go along and be able to stretch themselves out. We need you. We need baby boomers, and we need, you know, those who are just post-baby boomers. If you're born in the 60s, you've been around long enough, you have at least some basic civics, and you at least understand this. I'm going to probably presume that the majority, because I have no idea what the demographics are of this radio show, but I believe that every red-blooded American that is hearing my voice and starts understanding exactly what we're talking about, we need people that understand this like you do, stepping into office. You can lead and you can do this without looking. Don't worry about the blessings. Don't worry about the immediate gratification and the handout or the credit. The history, if you do this right, history will record what you have done and you will go down in the annals. I mean, if you think Thomas Jefferson's name is big today, your name could even be much bigger 500 years from now. And I am not kidding around, because we have done something and we would be able to do something, even though those men created it. Not even those men would dare to take credit. This was something that the Lord blessed them with the insights to give us as a tool and opportunity. And the Lord will bless us equally, and our names will shine. Your names, not mine. Your names will shine in contrast to many of the framers. I mean, there are key people like James Madison that, I mean, it's kind of like Aristotle still shines today. But your name would be ranked in there. And the way you articulated as a statesman, as a statesperson, man or woman, we're at the point in our lives, we're at the point in the history of this nation where either we arise to the greatness that we have within us, the potential that we possess, we are either arise to that or we will fall. And because we're so divided, we truly need leaders. And one of the things I tell people about leaders is leaders attract leaders. Leaders will, you get out there, start leading, other people will come. They will get there. They will become a part of all of this. So anyway, let me get into what Madison stated here. As he goes on and he says, because all of these departments basically, you know, it is through the sovereignty of the states and this compact that they hold their delegated trusts. On any other hypothesis, the delegation of judicial power would annul the authority delegating it and the concurrence of this department with the others in usurped powers might subvert forever and beyond the possible reach of any rightful memory or remedy, the very Constitution which all are instituted to preserve. Now, let me just say this again. He says it right there, that the remedy is there, that the very Constitution which all, every state, every public servant, are instituted to preserve it. Not the office of the president, not the Democratic Party, not a, you know, not a government, not a body, not an ideology, the Constitution. Interesting. This is so powerful. Friends, you need to understand, and this isn't hard. As a matter of fact, I know you do. I apologize. Forgive me. I know you understand these things. That's why you're listening. And I know you're getting this. What do I have to tell you? How can I put it that you actually say this? Where you, if you're driving, don't slam your foot down. But as I tell you, slam your foot down, stand up, and say, I am going to do this. I am going to go file. I am going to get into this race. And if it's too late to file, you're going to be the upsetter. You go out and find out who the best person that can fit the bill that is in the race, and you convince them. You convince them to say, if you want the opportunity of being able to become a Thomas Jefferson, you have to live to the morals of that man. If you want to become the George Washington, the James Madison, you have to live to those morals. And you have to live to the ideal that it is about individual liberty and individual sovereignty and not about your career. You serve people first, and the Lord will bless you, and you will be blessed, and you'll be remembered like they were if you serve. If you serve yourself, you'll be cast away. You'll be crumbled like twigs and cast away into the wind to be scattered, never to be gathered again. And I'm serious, friends, and I know you know this is true. And I know you can feel the conviction and the resolve in my voice. As we move forward in this, consequently, any and all roles, responsibilities, and powers exercised by the general government that are not specifically granted in the Constitution requires the states to unify into a tribunal that Madison spoke of, to interpose upon the general government into full compliance with their compact. In the nearly 19th century, or actually if you read these documents, they're actually good. It's just that I kind of misread them myself. And this is my document. This is so sad. I'm so sorry. In the early 19th century, when Congress tried three times to expand the powers of the general government to assume powers over state highways and waterways, all three presidents vetoed these bills that, in essence, would establish the footings for a Department of Transportation. In 1817, President Madison vetoed what was referred to as the Bonus Bill, stating the power does not exist within the Constitution. If Congress desired to exercise this power, President Madison admonished Congress to seek an amendment to the Constitution as the only mode for the states to constitutionally delegate this power to the general government. You know, I know I'm repeating a lot of these things that I've told you before, but putting this in this document, this may be the first time somebody ever reads this when you hand this to them. They may not know about the Department of Transportation. They may not know about some of these things. But anyway, moving on, my document states, in 1822, Congress attempted a similar bill with President Monroe, who also vetoed it for the same reason. Actually, I'll tell you, he actually gives you far more details as to how these powers don't exist. In 1830, Congress tried again to obtain this power from the states with President Jackson. He cited Presidents Madison and Monroe's reasons for vetoing the previous bills and asserted that Congress must seek an amendment to the Constitution to properly exercise this power. Now we get into some background. So we've only covered kind of like the introduction and the front end. Now we're getting into the actual background. And when I say the background, I'm talking about this thing called, you know, the historical precedents and the legality and those types of things. So from this point on, we're on page four now. This point on, we're kind of getting into the legal precedents. So when we come back in our next episode, we will have the remainder of this. I'm J.R. Mobley, Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.